Evening.
Evening.
It's become quite a ritual. Well, years ago we did Shantideva, the Bodhisattva's way of life. Since that time, an awful lot of other books have come out about it. I'm just dazzled by how much material there is, including a brand new one by Pema Chodron that I just picked up on the way over here. I made a very incomplete list for us. I've got Pema in the list of the translations, but she really should be under the commentaries. It's an extensive commentary on just about every verse. Thank you. And this is the pile that I have collected through the years. This is Pema's new book. It's just in hardcover, and it's big, very big. The one that I used before is this little paperback. Crosby and Skilton are the translators of this. Karyavatara. Which is the way, or the bodhisattva way. This one is nice because it has a chapter that they write before each chapter, or a little essay before each one. Then the Dalai Lama has a couple, one of which I didn't bring, the commentary. Oh, I guess I did.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a really obvious question?
Yeah.
Is this a translation of a specific document, or is this a topic that various people have
written? Oh, it's a specific document.
It is.
Shantideva lived around the 7th century, Christian era, 7th century. Okay. So he was almost 1,000 years after Buddha, and taught at Nalanda University. It's a very touching story, as much as we know, which is practically nothing, that he compiled out of all the teachings that he knew. He made a compilation, a kind of anthology of Buddhist teachings. And then it seems from this writing that he took himself to task about it. He picked himself, he looked at it and looked at the reflection in the mirror, you could say, and then charged himself with meeting the teaching. It's the paramitas, so it's all laid out according to the, more or less according to the paramitas. A lot about patience, including anger and vigor. Not much about generosity. A great deal to start with about bodhicitta, which is sort of the essence of the whole thing, to generate the mind of enlightenment in order to be an enlightening mind, you could say. In order to be able to meet the teachings and to really assess one's own situation, one's own life. Most of them are spoken, if you could say spoken, to you. The language is or one. Oh no, I can't find any of it. So sensitive, touched only by hot water, you are scalded. How can you rest at ease like this when you have committed acts worthy of hell? It's a good one to choose. He's very hard, very hard. When I first read this, I had a real hard time with it because I felt like it was, you know, stabbing me in the heart. And it felt so much like my born-again Christian brother's Calvinistic attacks on sinful nature, that it just, I couldn't handle it. But if you think about it as him, he is addressing himself, then it has a whole different flavor. The next one is, hey you, expecting results without effort, so sensitive, so long-suffering. You in the clutches of death, acting like an immortal. Hey sufferer, you're destroying yourself. Well, you can read that a lot of different ways. And if you read it as goading himself and teasing himself at the same time, then it has a different taste. But there's a lot of that in here. So the basis of it is compassion. And the pattern of it is the paramitas. The myth is that he was a layabout, a lazy, no-good-for-nothing monk living at Nalanda University, the great university of that world. And people all teased him and told him he was no good and said he didn't know anything about the Dharma at all. And finally, they challenged him and said, okay, you tell us everything that you know. And they built him a very high, so high a seat that he obviously couldn't get up there. And he did anyway. So first bit of magic. And then he told this whole poem, this whole long 10-chapter poem to them. And when he got to the 10th chapter, he rose up into the heavens and disappeared. So
still there.
Still there. Most of these translations, in fact, all of these translations are based on the Tibetan version of it, who took it straight from the Sanskrit. And so you get it Tibetan in the commentaries especially, there's a very Tibetan flavor to it. This is my favorite because there isn't that you. He says, since living beings and enlightened beings are alike in that the qualities of a Buddha arise in dependence upon them, why do we not show the same respect to living beings as we do to enlightened beings?
Which one is that?
This is the Geshe Kelsang Gyatso, who is a current living teacher and has done an enormous amount of translation of basic texts. And he uses I. By benefiting these living beings, I can repay Buddha, who many times gave up his life and entered, etc.
Is it just the translation or also his commentary?
This has no commentary at all.
So he has another one.
Yes, he has a commentary. In fact, I think I have that here. Yeah.
The last one.
Yeah, the last one, meaningful to behold. Yeah, this has nothing. It has a glossary in the back, but that's it.
Okay.
You have that one, the commentary?
I think so.
Uh-huh. So one thing we have to decide is what we're going to base our discussion on. And I would suggest we do what we did with the Dhammapada and just choose one. And as far as I can see, they're all pretty much close to each other.
Do you think the online ones are okay too?
Yeah, as far as I can see, they're pretty fine too.
Do you think it would be wise for reference purposes when we're in, you know, doing it, that we use the online translations that you've listed rather than the commentaries, or are we going to be reviewing a particular commentary as well?
I don't think so, unless people want to do that. I think it that's a lot of homework.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. What do you all think?
Is it possible to read and scope out a chapter for each meeting, or is that too big a unit of content?
They're pretty long.
It's not like the Dhammapada, but it's pretty long.
No, it's not. Let's see, the first chapter is in here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Yeah, we could do that. One, two, three, four, five, six for that. So they're different sizes.
So do you want to do a set number of pages?
Yeah, we could do that. 2.5 pages every night, every time, or something.
Are we going to finish this book?
Well, we could read the whole chapter each time and then just see how far we...
Yeah.
Or just bring in our own commentary and questions after reading the whole chapter.
Yeah.
That might be more efficient.
Mm-hmm. So that would be 10 weeks?
Yes. Oh dear. I read the wrong thing, didn't I?
Is that a little bit too much to do, you think? Is that what you're saying?
No, I said good. 10 weeks is enough. Why did we take this book? We'll take this book.
Well, we can also read the Shantideva, but address, put more emphasis on the paramitas themselves. I mean, that's a whole teaching all by itself without Shantideva's concerns about how to do.
Yeah, I think the idea, I don't, you know, some may require a couple meetings in, you know, some chapters, but I, you know, if we're up to reading, you were suggesting that, you know, we read a chapter and we come and discuss it and bring up questions. If I remember, you know, usually there was like one or two, you know, stanzas that really, you know,
yes,
beginning and the end, you know, kind of like the, I got through college, you know, beginning and the end are really, and then because it was a verbal, what do you call it, you know, it's
oral,
so it's a lot of repetition, because it's, you know, on and off, and then there's just some exquisite, you know, stanzas in there.
Yeah.
You'll probably recognize them, you know, as you read them. Something.
Now, you can actually reverse the process. So somebody who's read it before could tell us which ones ahead of time are kind of like the hot spots.
I think it changes every time I read it.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
So then are you saying in the week we just pick out a version that we want and just read that one and
yeah.
talk about it? That's
yeah.
So we could pick one with the commentary or not.
Yes.
The commentary also has generally, if not, I guess you just like to get the
If I remember correctly, too, Pema Chodron's and the Dalai Lama, their commentaries are based on the same translation, which is by that group.
This group, yeah. I've forgotten what it's called. Yeah, it's a Tibetan translation. They're doing a lot of translating. Padmakara.
Do you happen to know if either of the online translations are of that?
Of that?
Of that group, by that group.
Oh, no, they're not.
They're not.
Can we pass the books around?
Sure. The Dalai Lama suggests that we choose out of each chapter one verse and memorize it. Make it your own. So that's something we could do. Yeah.
One year I wrote my favorite verses and hung them on the AC tree. Maybe it's through most of the winter.
That's nice.
Do you have a preference, Angie, for either of the online ones?
The Shantideva.net comes out of Bangladesh. And they sort of claim Shantideva as their own. I'm not sure what that group is exactly, but they give a whole long story about how there were two Shantidevas, and one was the composer of this work, and then somebody else was in a later generation, and they were both kings, and it's all a very fancy story around it. The Birds and Archives is a whole bunch of translations of various material. So that's, I think, more, it sounds more solid somehow. Dalai Lama calls it doing battles with his negative emotions. I'm reading, which reminds me, I wanted to tell you, I'm reading a book that Catherine Thanis suggested because somebody at Zen Center had suggested it to her, called A General Theory of Love. Have you seen that book? Have you read it?
Parts of it.
It's an amazing book. It's how the brain works. You think it's going to be some kind of romance, but it's not. It's got brain diagrams and all kinds of experiments that have been done, cognitive experiments. And it's an examination of the second brain. He talks about the three brains, the lizard brain, which is the instinctual, how our body works and how we survive in the world instinctually, and then the midbrain, which is the emotional brain, and then the this big, he says, it's like a big folded napkin on top, which is the thinking brain or the cogitating brain. So the emphasis is on that middle brain, which is connected to the other two. And he talks about how in some ways they're all connected, and in other ways they sort of go off on their own. So that there are a lot of things that we do that we're not even conscious of doing, or things that we think that we don't even know that we think. And then he gives demonstrations of ways that they've found that out. I'm just about halfway through, so I can't tell the whole thing, but it's about relationship and human connection with everything, which is exactly what this bodhisattva thing is all about, how we connect. And he says we learn as babies how to connect, that we read our mother's faces as soon as we're born, and that our innards get in sync with the people that we're around, even as babies. And we learn how to in sync ourselves in different ways, depending on how they are with us. So that much of our learning is already given to us at a very, very, very young age. So it's about waking up to our conditioning in a new way, but with the same notion, and waking up to waking up, which means connecting, being connected, actually feeling the connection and living it rather than reacting and avoiding. So by the time we get to Shantideva, Buddhism has gone through a lot of changes. There was after Buddha died, they all decided what Buddha had said and agreed on it. But not too long after that, there was a disagreement, and that was the beginning of various schools forming. Were set on the original teachings without any change. All phenomena exist and are unstable. All must strive for release of rebirth. And Buddhas are people. But that changed. So by the time Shantideva came along, there were various schools, and Buddha had become not only a person, but also a way of talking about transcendence. So people actually would call for Buddha or pray to Buddha or have visions of Buddha. Or make statues of Buddha. That none of that ever happened in the early days at all. And of course, we've inherited that. Zen became one of those schools long after Shantideva, but not so long actually. Bodhidharma went to China about the same time, I think. So there's the middle way school of Nagarjuna and the mind-only school. Question, is consciousness the ultimate reality? Is there just one consciousness, or two, or three? There are different schools of thought about all of that. And many of the Zen koans play around with that. There's that one of my favorites about the teacher who taught... I've forgotten how it goes. Mind is Buddha. And his student took that into the forest and did a long retreat, and the teacher sent somebody to check him out, and the checker said, "How are you doing?" And he said, "Mind is Buddha." And the checker said, "Well, but the teacher isn't teaching that anymore. The teacher is teaching no mind, no Buddha." So the hermit said, "Mind is Buddha." So the checker went back and told the teacher, and the teacher said, "Oh, he's doing really well. He's doing great." So it's what I call the school of grain of salt. It's important to remember that. There's very little real information about Shantideva, just practically nothing. So all we have is his voice through somebody else's voice. So as usual, you know, all the material that we study is coming from far, far away, long ago, and in a voice that has traveled all the way up to here. In a way, it's an incredible connection. But we need to listen hard and with a kind of understanding of the cultural differences and the differences in our kind of practice. I mean, this practice that is happening in America is not the same as what was happening in Nalanda University. However close to Shakyamuni Buddha's teaching we feel we are, still our world is so, so very different. So we bring our world to these teachings and bring our American minds to it, which can be very interesting. There's nothing to believe, just something to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words, as we say. And if it's too difficult, I mean, if it really tastes bad, we don't have to do it. We can just see how it feels and feel our way along. You might be surprised. So, questions? The Dalai Lama, by the way, is going to be in San Francisco this weekend. That was in the paper this morning. It said that there are a few monks down here in San Jose who've been setting the whole thing up kind of desperately. And they're expecting a lot of people. It costs, the cheapest seats are $100.
Is he doing an empowerment sort of thing then?
It didn't say what he was doing exactly. I imagine so if it's a weekend. Usually he does it a couple of days of teachings and then an empowerment afterward. And he often teaches Shantideva. When he came to San Jose, that's what he did.
Is it an empowerment? Or what is it, an empowerment?
It's a ceremony.
Okay.
It's a ceremony where after you've received a teaching from the teacher, then you are given a kind of confirmation of receiving. Having received. It's a wonderful experience with him. He has a very melodious voice, so even when you can't understand what he's saying, it's still very beautiful. And then there are translations. So first time I heard him was by accident. I was in northern India in a little town visiting somebody that I had known by mail, and somebody there said, "Oh, Dalai Lama's in town," and I couldn't believe it. It was just this little bohunk town, but he comes there every year and gives a teaching, and people came from hundreds of miles away, all up in the high mountains. They all came down with their long braids and their beautiful clothes. It was amazing. And then he showed up in San Jose at the auditorium, at the that big place where they play basketball. So we'll talk more next week.
Next week, chapter one, or
not yet? Yes, let's do chapter one. How shall we do this? Because Wendy, Samia, Julian, who else is missing? Jane? Yeah, you have their numbers.
Well, would it be okay just to post something to the group? Make an announcement we're studying, and what I'll do.
Good idea.
Can you have this in some computerized format?
Yeah.
Can you send it to me?
Yeah.
And I will put it up on the website as our next study's topic.
Okay.
Okay, so they can reference. So make a reference to that, and you might. Just give me a day or two until that gets posted. Maybe
okay.
Keep an eye out, and then once that's up,
sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.